Hello, everyone. It's time for episode 6 of the Intelligent Campus with Greg and Don. Today's episode, Making the Connection, Decoding the Trends and Challenges of Wi-Fi on Campus. As always, our hosts are Greg Kovich and Don Otto. Greg will be hosting on his own today as Don is traveling as part of his duties for Ridley Public Schools. Joining Greg today is Hator Ferroni, the head of Network Solutions for Education at Alcatel-Lucent Enterprise. Hator has more than 20 years of experience in both the enterprise and carrier markets and holds a BS in computer science from the Brazilian University of Campinas. He is responsible for go-to-market strategy and business development of education network solutions and is a thought leader for IoT and wireless technology. Gentlemen, take it away.
Thank you so much, Blaine. And Hator, I am so happy to have you on today's session. You know, the topic that I'd like to chat with you about is wireless networking, Wi-Fi networking in education. And to me, as a former technology director in K-12, the Wi-Fi invention or standard did not really happen until after I had already left the industry. And I've been able, from the sidelines, be able to see its impact, especially through the lens of my wife's activities as a teacher, as a classroom teacher for the last 35 years. And with this, Wi-Fi has truly enabled different teaching styles and access to all sorts of different content. And for today's session, I would like to talk or keep our conversation to those that are non-technical, but that are still our decision makers and need to be able to understand some of the concepts or directions that are going on in Wi-Fi. You know, we're hearing a lot about this thing called Wi-Fi 6. And I think that is, it may be a little confusing for folks that are not really deep into the wireless LAN technology, the 802.11 technology from the IEEE. And so I was wondering if you might be able to you know, explain maybe for any of the listeners here, this Wi-Fi 6 may be talking about.
Sure. Well, let's say the industry is changing how it calls the different generations of Wi-Fi. So since this is the next evolution, is the sixth generation, so we're calling it Wi-Fi 6, or also previously known as 802.11ax. And all it is, let's say, an evolution from the previous technology that was the 802.11ac Wave 2 that brings, of course, improvements in performance, in the quality of the communications that it offers to users, but also to devices, right? There is a lot of enhancements towards IoT. So these are all improvements that are coming up with this next generation of technology around Wi-Fi.
Ah, thank you. Thank you. It's interesting because I had heard that this Wi-Fi 6, I think you touched on a little bit, you know, is an amendment to the existing specification, technical specification, that is and kind of is an improvement over the previous one, as you mentioned. And that improvement is to help with more high density deployments, so that, you know, such as places like, you know, like large group instruction rooms or very large lecture halls in a university campus, and even stadiums or field houses. And tell me, you mentioned IoT. Do you see IoT as being, you know, a thing in education?
So I think the what we see is an evolution on the education technology in general. We all have seen the adoption of digital textbooks, of online, let's say, lectures, and especially online assessment that is, you know, mandated in quite a lot of our K-12. So all these technologies are contributing to not only get the students used to technology, but also to make it more fun, right? We have like a game-based learning. We're doing more and more blended learning. Every student with the one-to-one ratio initiative are provided with some sort of device, being a laptop or Chromebook, a, you know, whatever device is more convenient. You know, this is really making it more engaging, more interesting for the students, you know, in both K through 12 and higher education. I think that's the main point, if you agree. I don't know if you've seen that as well on your side, especially with your wife still being into the school system.
Oh, absolutely. She, in fact, has been for several years now been praising these Chromebooks that she has in the classroom. And, you know, and to me, when I, you know, asked more questions, was finding out that each classroom was outfitted with the number of Chromebooks that they need for each of the students. So essentially there's a 1-to-1 ratio. And again, hearing about 802.11ax or Wi-Fi 6 and understanding that that high density deployments or high density locations are going to be better supported through bandwidth and for fairness on the airtime, I thought, wow, this is, you know, Wi-Fi is really becoming a point that is getting to a point that can truly help educators with teaching and learning. You know, and tell me though, you know, you mentioned, you know, several different trends that have been going on, which is, you know, digital books and this BYOD and topics like that. But, you know, what's your feeling about, let's say, like augmented reality and virtual reality?
Oh, yes. I think the potential is gigantic, right? Can you imagine that you know, because more and more, if you look at when we probably you and I studied, it was all about books, right? And looking at the blackboard and the teacher just, you know, writing the blackboard. But now it's much more about feeling and touching and, you know, really absorbing
immersive.
Whatever the subject the teaching is trying to expose. And, you know, you can be inside a museum, you can visit a country, right? So the potential for these technologies is incredible. And I do agree that more and more we're going to see this being used. The augmented reality actually can be used, you know, when you go to not only K through 12, but to higher education. Look at, you know, the medical schools. Now you can almost do a heart surgery or open a body to do a biopsy without all the requirements of having physically a body there, right? So, yeah, it's economically more efficient and you can explore much more options using this sort of technology.
So it's probably reasonable to say then that for you know, today's administrators and decision makers that are out there, when they're hearing their IT staff talk to them about the need to move to this Wi-Fi 6, that this is really they're looking out for the future of the classroom and also for the reputation of the institution.
Yeah, exactly. You brought a great point, Greg, because if you look at the needs today, really there is no urgent need to jump to Wi-Fi 6 right away, because first of all, you don't have the devices that support the technology, so you cannot take advantage. But you have to look into the future, what's coming next, right? The next generation of devices are gonna have that, and you know, we're gonna use more video, more, you know, heavy amount of data coming through your network, so you need to be prepared for that. So you always have to plan a few years ahead of what's coming.
Great advice. Great advice. And this really wouldn't be a stranded investment either, since these standards for the 802.11 specification that Wi-Fi 6 is on are always backwards compatible. So the devices that work on today's network will also work on tomorrow's network, even if it's a Wi-Fi 6 network. So that's nice to know that you're not going to be stranded, but that you are, you know, enabling your teachers and your students to be able to get the most out of their experience in school. You know, hey, Tom, I'm really glad you're here because, you know, you have impressed me with your vast knowledge about the Internet of Things and also the kind of the development of different communications that are available in today's wireless access points. And these access points, you know, normally when the specification first came out, it was strictly to be able to discover and talk to the wireless LAN cards that are in computers or the chips that are in phones. But today's, they're a little bit more than that. Can you like share for the audience, kind of what they would be seeing and maybe allow them to be able to, you know, figure out what does that mean for them?
So let's go back to your original question from the beginning, the IoT, right? Why is this important when you consider your Wi-Fi network? Mm-hmm. So we see in the schools in general, more and more devices being used, right? For educational purpose, think about the smart boards, projectors, TV players, and all sorts of devices. For the STEM, you have all sorts of devices that are connected. You have equipment that is in the classrooms for security purpose, surveillance cameras, sometimes for operational thermostats, door locks, right? All sorts of devices that are being more and more present into K-12, into universities, right? So this, the expectation is an explosion of devices connected. And now the question comes, how do you connect? Which technology you use? And there is a variety of technologies. The first two most used were LAN, the Ethernet, and Wi-Fi, because it is available. However, there are certain devices that use other wireless technologies. You can talk about Zigbee, Thread, about BLE, right? These are all technologies that, some have advantages regarding the area that they cover, others about the precision, the amount of bandwidth that they offer. So you see now access points, wireless access points, doing multiple protocols. And this is important because, for example, if you look at some of our thermostats, Honeywell, for example, uses a lot of Zigbee to interconnect this device for lighting. Others use Wi-Fi. BLE is also being improved in the next version 5.0 to be used as an IoT protocol. So when you look at your wireless deployment, make sure that you analyze, see, okay, they do only Wi-Fi, or are they able also to be a gateway to other wireless technologies? So these are all aspects that have to be considered.
Oh, what great advice. So not only just to look at it for the traditional uses, but also what other things can you do? That would have been handy for me. Last week, I was visiting a couple customers, and at one was a K-12, and they were talking about the plans this summer to renovate two buildings. And part of that renovation plan was to update their HVAC system. It was, I think, Johnson Controls was going to be the systems integrator or the actual project manager for this project. And they asked about Zigbee. And they had said something along the lines that in order to manage it, they would have to stand up a separate Zigbee network that would allow them, the maintenance folks, to be able to monitor the the settings and the health and performance of the system. So you're saying that with some APs, Zigbee is actually one of the types of communication protocols that the AP is listening for. So that in his case, they could, as they refresh their wireless LAN, they don't have to go out and invest in a separate Zigbee network. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, of course, you can have separate networks for each type of device you're going to connect, right, to each use. But ideally, for economics purpose, you want to converge into a single network. Right, so as much as you can do in the same infrastructure to support all these different needs, the better you are. Of course, this brings sometimes concerns of security as well. So one aspect is connectivity, but then once you connect, what you do with that data, how you protect your network. We all heard stories, I don't know if you remember a few years ago about Target, right, that Somebody got access to the air conditioning system.
Yeah, I got impacted by that. I had to get a new credit card.
Exactly. How many millions of people, right, had to have a new credit card because of that, let's say a cyber attack, right, that we had a target. So, we need to look for something that is able to, what we do today, nowadays, the technology is to segment the network. So you have a single physical network, but you create virtual, independent, totally separate segments. So the thermostats can only talk to the thermostats and to the system that control them. Let's say the smart boards can only talk to the application that stores the data that is drawn or display into the smart board. And one system cannot talk to the other. That's how you protect.
So that if they get infected or they get exploited somehow, they can't bleed over and attack others.
Exactly.
Ha,
So this is
interesting.
something that I really advise people to take into consideration, right? And especially look for a solution that does that automatically for you. Right, that you don't have to go and configure manually each device that connects, and also that doesn't you don't have to set up which segment he is on. So there is some sort of automation to ease this. Right, imagine if you're going to deploy, 1,000, I don't know, thermostats or 1,000 light into your university. You don't want to go and have to onboard each one of these devices. So you want to have some sort of automatic onboarding and recognition of devices.
Oh, and securely put them in their place. Yeah, good. Yeah, I like that. That is an excellent, that is good advice. And in fact, it actually leads me to another is that, when you're, it's actually, this is probably something that you absolutely do need to do, given how important the wireless network is to educators today. Let's take a look at the K-12 side of the education equation. When you see a school district, and it doesn't matter what state it is, they're constantly being in some sort of preparation for an online assessment, some sort of online testing. And in some districts where they don't have the infrastructure to support it, it would be one classroom at a time to go and take their test. And in other districts, the infrastructure is sufficiently mature that there or and has the bandwidth and probably maybe the security features to be able to allow the entire grade level to go ahead and take those online tests, much more efficient. So I am very happy to see that we've been thinking through these types of ideas about securing and isolating, containing the different types of devices that maybe are not, production or germane to the main mission of the education institution, and still work that. Now, kind of a, I don't want to call it a pivot, but just another idea here. We're talking about Wi-Fi 6, and it's the sixth iteration of the 802.11 specification, but there's also kind of an evolution in the architecture of wireless devices. And not to get too technical, but can you describe to me kind of like what the Wi-Fi world was like in the beginning, and then its evolution, and then now its further evolution?
Well, so a long time ago, the APs were fully intelligent devices, right? So it started that way, but they were quite expensive because each AP had to be able to do all the functions on its own. Then the next, let's say, generation, we saw a controller-based architecture where a lot of the functions are done at a central point of view, and each AP was much simpler hardware. So all the traffic was tunneled from the AP all the way to the central controller. Advantage was in a single point, you could do all your security, you could manage all the access, you can do all the configuration from one single point. But as you can imagine, as the speeds are starting to increase, you know, that central point becomes a bottleneck. So, you know, it becomes a very expensive hardware to be able to, you know, manage all that throughput coming from, you know, sometimes thousands of APs.
Today's state, we still have controllers. Is there another evolution from the controller?
Yeah, there is another evolution, what we call a distributed controller, right? So you still have a single point of configuration, of management of the policies. However, all the traffic is managed locally at the APs, and the APs talk to each other and know where to forward the package. So the traffic doesn't go anymore to a central controller. So you really have a virtual management, and all the information, actually, all the traffic is distributed between the APs. So this allows you to escalate better, right? So you can handle more throughput. You eliminate a single point of failure. And because you don't have that expensive piece of hardware at the central point, you also have more economical networks.
It sounds to me too like in that type of construct that you can enable cloud-based. You could do this remotely, couldn't you? You don't have to be on campus to make changes or to set up a new AP, do you?
Yeah, that's perfectly right, Greg. You have cloud-based solutions now, so you can either have on your own premise or managed by the vendor or in a cloud, in a public cloud, and then you know, you don't need to worry about maintaining a server, you don't need to worry about software updates and upgrades, always managed for you. And it's much simpler to deploy, especially for K-12, where we know in this in a school district, sometimes you have one person that really is knowledgeable about wireless and IT, and the schools have nobody. It's just one of the teachers that takes that function, right? So the more you can do that from a cloud-based solution, the better.
Oh yeah, and you can also then free up the IT guys to be able to handle anything in the classroom or give or you know more high impact projects instead of just the daily grind of this device isn't getting on the network. You know, you can farm that out to somebody else. I think that's a great idea. You mentioned when we were you know first describing some of the additions in Wi-Fi 6, something called location-based services. And then I also heard you mention, I think, something that's tied to location-based services when you were describing some of the other communication avenues that an AP can support, and that was BLE. Can you tell us a little bit more about what these acronyms mean and what it might mean for a school district or a university?
Sure, Greg, and you're right on the spot. So another thing that we see in this new generation of access points is the support of BLE or Bluetooth Low Energy, and this is, you know, another wireless protocol that has been used and very efficiently for what we call location-based services, which is the ability to really is like your Google Map, right? Or, you know, provide a location, show the location where you are, and from there provide you services like wayfinding, so how to go from point A to point B. But also you have solutions like a geofencing that allows you to create virtual physical areas where you get notified when somebody enters, leaves, or remains in that area for a certain period of time.
So you mean that if you are using location-based services, let's say you're a K through 12. I remember when I was in K through 12, there was always, I mean, when I was in elementary school, there was always, you know, you always had the same room, okay? And all day long, there's the same kid that like three or four times would ask to go to the bathroom. And the teacher would always give him a pass. And that kid was constantly getting in trouble. He was always roaming the halls and doing stuff that he shouldn't. Are you saying that in a location-based services enabled classroom or a school that you could actually hand a kid? Well, what would a child need? Would it be just simply something like an RFID tag, or would they need something a little bit more active?
You have multiple options. Let's say for a K through 12, you're probably going to give him a tag, right? A kind of a badge or some device to use that transmit BLE. Like a badge. That's typically what you do for K through 12. Now, if you're talking to higher education, everybody has a smartphone, and a smartphone has a BLE transmitter and receiver integrated into the hardware. So they just need to use their own smartphone, and with an app installed there, you can have the same functionality.
Oh, excellent. And that's perfect, because in higher education, they're encouraged to have their smart device with them. But in K through 12, it's very rare that it's encouraged that children bring their tech with them into the classroom. So then again, going back to this, my very vivid example, if you had, let's say, an RFID enabled badge that student then geofence the bathroom, the teacher, well, you don't, probably don't want to make the teacher, let's say somebody that's important, like the dean or dean of students, or maybe the security officer, or even the vice principal or principal for the building, you know, it knows then that that this person has a hall pass, a virtual hall pass, and that they're only supposed to go to the bathroom, and that they can monitor then when they enter and exit then. And if they go anywhere else, they're able to actually know that as well, wouldn't they?
Yes, definitely. You can, for example, create areas in the corridors, right? And if you see people wandering in the corridors of the school when they are in class time, something is wrong, right? If it's something quick, yeah, they went to the restroom. But if people is just going from one place to another, you can send somebody there to check what's going on. So the potentials actually for location are amazing, right? You can do that for class attendant. The example that you gave of checking where kids are going, making sure that nobody leaves the premise of the school. You can use that to locate in an emergency situation, right? You know, we don't want to remember that, but we all know that sometimes there are shooting situations, right? And you need to maybe locate people that can support an emergency situation as quick as possible. So you can find somebody on your staff that is closer to where the incident is happening. So all these are potential, let's say, use cases of the location technology.
Like in a higher ed setting too, I could even see this where a student can pull up an app on their phone and see how busy the cafeteria is over on this part of campus. And if they see that it's like, you know, really full up, they can, you know, inquire about other places to go to be able to eat and have a quiet meal. Tell me then, is it possible to then, well, I guess it is, because you were just mentioning that crisis example, that you would know what individuals were nearest the actual source of the origin of the crisis. You can then track individual people then. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can track individual people. You can for sure, right? You know, you probably may want to do that for, you know, security personnel, cleaning personnel, right, that are in the campus. And you may want, you know, to know so you can organize who is better to do what kind of situation, right? Who is better to handle certain situations than others?
You know, my school district just went through a tens of million dollar renovation project for the high school. And it was, and my daughters who both went there had said that it was long overdue, because there were very much times where there were so many students in the hallway that there was choke points and they were not getting to class on time during passing periods. So this would also be a technology that would, you know, I was mentioning before about, like, you know, the higher ed example of seeing whether or not a cafeteria is loaded up or not. That would be another way for a school district, if they had these RFID tags on student identification badges, that they can actually just monitor the flow and see how dense different areas of the building are, to help them understand planning and even, you know, that, gosh, maybe we shouldn't have students in this section and then afterwards have to go through this hallway to get to their next section. We need to maybe split that up and do a little bit better design on our our scheduling. I think that's a wonderful technology to give a much better experience and take a little bit of a stress out of the day of the student. That from my experience, even back in the 70s when I was in school, it was stressful. You know, you had tests and you had expectations of your parents and even your teachers that you didn't want to let down. And I understand that today's that's just multiplied by 10 or more, that students are constantly concerned about their grades, their GPA, how many AP credits that they have, and so on and so forth. So I think this would be that's very interesting. It's good to see the technology able to help administrators and really education professionals be able to design a better and more friendly learning environment for their students.
And PeopleFlow that you mentioned, Greg, can also be used, let's say, you have stadiums in some of the universities, right, for the football games. And sometimes you have really big crowds that you want to know where they are passing. Is this the best way? You know, you can do that for marketing purpose. You may want them to pass through near your shop. Yeah, or even for security, right? You see people are accumulating too much in one place and you want to distribute that better. So there are multiple cases where you can analyze the flow. And to analyze flow, I mentioned about BLE because that's one of the technologies that gives you a fairly good precision. But some of the flow can be provided just with Wi-Fi. So just the Wi-Fi technology can give you a rough idea or where people is. Not as precise as BLE. But, you know, you're going to see in some cases algorithms that mix, you know, input from the Wi-Fi, input for the BLE, or use one or the other. But these are all technologies that can contribute to location services.
Well, you know, if I'm a non-technical decision maker and I'm listening to my IT guys explain to me why we want to make an investment, and let's say, and even one that's where we're moving away from a controller based to a distributed, decoupled data plane, control plane. Are they losing anything from the management side? I mean, is there analytics that are lost, or is there, you know, weakened security?
Because of going to a distributed technology?
Yeah, to like this cloud thing that we were just talking about.
Not at all. I actually only see advantages to go to the distributed. It's really an evolution from what we had before, right? So again, you eliminate the single point of failure, you improve scalability. I really only see advantages to going to that type of architecture.
So you don't lose anything then? You still have the same, like, you know, you can still look and still see the same analytics, you know, the same type of, proactive or reactive displays of traffic and even be able to outfit and deploy security policies.
Yes. And the analytics are all there, right? And the analytics are from, how many users connected, who is connected, at what time, what devices they are using, what operating systems they have, all the way to location analytics as well, right? Where are they located? How much time they stay in a certain location? Room management is another thing, right? Which rooms or in a school or in a university are being more used, less used? How many people in a certain location? Is the library full, right? Do you have enough spots available for the students, or it's overcrowded? Or as you mentioned, right, is a certain cafeteria too crowded? I've heard even a story the other day of a university that wants to use this technology to avoid the frustration of students waiting in line for too long to get their coffee, for example, the coffee shop. So, yeah, if they see that the line is too big, they can send a notification with a coupon to say, hey, you have another cafeteria in the building right by this one. It's 100 yards away and you get a free donut, let's say. And, they're trying to really think about the experience and minimize any type of frustration, because the students, as you mentioned, already have a lot of pressure from the academics point of view, right? For sometimes the uncertainty of are they going to get a job later on or not. So at the better environment we can create for them, I think the most advantages advantageous it is for the university and for the educational institutions.
I love that example of coffee. I have two children, and absolutely, when I go down and visit them at school, it would be the first thing in the morning was to do the, "Daddy, would you go and get some Starbucks for us?" It was, had to get that caffeine. You know, K through 12 is, in my estimation, is really, it's pure education, teaching, learning. The students are there. They're of minority. They're usually not of majority age until they become seniors in high school. And even at that time, they still have restrictions on the things that they can bring into the campus. But in higher education, their room is almost like a mini apartment. They got their own refrigerator. They brought their gaming device, whatever it may be, perhaps maybe even some sort of online stereo system. And of course, you know, if you look at some of EDUCAUSE's latest research on it, up to four devices per student that need to use the network. And when we're talking about using the network, maybe 10 years ago, or, you know, we'd be thinking majority of that would be looking for an Ethernet port. But today, when someone says, "I need to use the network," they're talking about Wi-Fi. So, you know, tell me then, in a construct here in higher education where students are coming in and trying to recreate a home environment while they're there, what are some of the dimensions or the things that a higher education administrator would need to consider or to be aware of as they're waiting to approve or decide upon what their IT guys are telling them?
I'm glad you brought this point, Greg, because, you know, sometimes we get so focused on the education and forget about the other aspects. And the university is really an experience, right? From, of course, from the educational point of view, but you also want to make sure that, you know, they have a good environment, that they enjoy, that they get their entertainment as well. And you are right to say that students bring lots of new devices, right? There are video games. Some universities even incentive e-gaming, right? It's another practice that is consuming a huge amount of bandwidth.
I've heard about scholarships for e-gamers.
Yeah. So, all sorts of devices, the Amazon, Alexas, right? Whatever device they want to bring that they use at home, they want to bring to the dorm and make sure that they can use them. So you have to think about aspects. So can the students come and register their devices? You know, are they somehow secured where only the student have access to his own devices? Also, these are all aspects to take into consideration. And, you know, you don't want to really limit the students of what they can use, right? Also, another aspect is streaming, right? How many people are watching sports, Netflix and Hulu and all these streaming videos, which is part of the entertainment, social media as well, another aspect.
I'm a Netflix subscriber, and I've been noticing that they have content that's 4K. Not just the HD content or even standard def content, but 4K content. What does that do to the bandwidth then when you're streaming 4K?
Yeah, that can have an impact. We have an interesting story in one of our customers that they noticed that in the afternoon, all of a sudden, the classroom, the availability of the throughput was very diminished in the beginning of the afternoon, you know, around 2-3 o'clock. And, Some of these technologies today allows you to do an analytics on the applications being used. And they noticed that there was a heavy use of Netflix during that class time. So, of course, they plan to expand and increase the number of access points so they can do the bandwidth so people can use it for whatever purpose. But in the meantime, they were able to create policies that limit the bandwidth for Netflix when it's class time. And then, of course, at night or later in the day, it's open for every application. But Netflix and all the streaming videos, they can consume quite a lot of bandwidth. So you have to think about your Wi-Fi network, but also the infrastructure behind your Wi-Fi, right? As you go to higher speeds, you need to upgrade your LAN access and the core of your network as well. So I think you need to create a plan to evolve the network infrastructure to really sustain and support the need of connectivity that we have today.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Hator. This has been the Intelligent Campus with Greg and Don, sponsored by Alcatel-Lucent Enterprise. Be sure to stay tuned for more episodes, and once again, thanks for listening.